Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is our second Defender of Caregivers podcast, and our topic today is caregiver guilt. My name is Lon Kiefer, your host, and I am a caregiver. In fact, I'm known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, and my expertise is understanding the caregiver personality and advocating for pro-per relationships between professional and personal family caregivers, absent of the caregiving flag of fear, loathing, anger, and guilt. Today's "you might be a caregiver if" statement is, drumroll please, you might be a caregiver if you sometimes take responsibility for things you really had no control over, and then you apologize for it. If that rings true to you, you might be a caregiver. And if you enjoy these "you might be a caregiver if" statements, if maybe you don't enjoy what it says or what it implies, but you do find them enjoyable to hear and insightful, you can have them delivered to you on a regular basis via email, free of charge, just, you know, so that you can reflect on them on your own or respond to them. All you have to do is go to youmightbeacaregiverif.com and sign up. You'll get the added benefit of getting to see a 2 or 3 minute video of a little old me, your host, Doc, the Defender of Caregivers. Now, as I say for the umpteenth millionth time that I'm Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, let me remind you that Doc does not mean doctor. I am not a doctor. I am not a trained therapist. I am not a psychiatrist, psychologist, psychotherapist. I am none of that. What I am is I am a nurse by training for 30 plus years, so I have some insights into this, but I do not profess to be a professional from a standpoint of therapy or therapeutic advice. What I am, though, is a guy that's been around a long time working with professional and personal caregivers. I read a lot. I research a lot. And I have a perspective to share that I think is helpful. But this is 30,000 foot stuff. This is not boots on the ground stuff. For a long time on Facebook at Defender of Caregivers, I'd start getting private messages from people asking questions about specific scenarios, and people would get angry with me when I would not answer the questions. And the reality is that it would be irresponsible of me to answer those questions. You know, I don't know the circumstances, I don't know the relationships, but more importantly, I don't know any of the resources that might be available in any specific area. Communities that are resource rich have a whole different level of support than those that are starved of resources, and people have various different financial wherewithal in order to, some people are more blessed financially than others. So I try and keep my, I don't even want to call it advice, but what I try and share, I try and keep at the 30,000 foot level so that people can make use of it in how they approach something. Because I've known many situations where there's tons of resources and tons of the ability to avail themselves of resources, meaning there's financial support and what have you, and yet they still find themselves trapped in the emotions of caregiving. So, that's the disclaimer there. Let's talk about upcoming dates. In April, I'll be attending and speaking at the Virginia Long-Term Care Network and the Virginia Assisted Living Association conferences back-to-back, Jack. The first week in April, we're going to be the VALA conference starts in Williamsburg, and then a few days later, just as it's wrapping up, the Virginia Long-Term Care Network conference starts in Short Pump, Richmond. Then on April 21st, I'll be at a private professional event in Nashville. Actually, I just lied to you. It's not in Nashville. My client heard the first podcast, and they pointed out to me that we're going to be in Kingsport, Tennessee, not Nashville, Tennessee, on April 21st. And then on May 8th, I'll be doing a professional caregiver event for Mercy Medical Center in Baltimore, Maryland. and doing caregiver-oriented sales training in conjunction with Health Facilities Association of Maryland on May 10th. You can private message me if you want to attend either of those events. Then the fun stuff. On May 19th, I'll be doing a personal family caregiver event, the second annual Purple Angels Dementia Awareness Conference for Caregivers with my friend Gary Joseph LeBlanc and Lisa Rodriguez in Sebring, Florida. That's on May 19th, and we're waiting on confirmation from United Way about a May 18th event down in that general area to try and take advantage of me being in the area. Check us out on Facebook, Defender of Caregivers, and I'm horrible at updating the calendar there, so I don't even try, but you can always direct message me if you've heard something that you would like to learn more about. So, and there you go. So let's get the advertisements out of the way. So this is the second podcast, and as I might have said earlier, because as truth be known, I want to do these unedited. I don't want to rehearse these, but this one almost feels a little bit rehearsed for a simple reason. This is the third time I've tried to lay it down, as they say in the industry, and I've messed up with the recording. Somehow I stopped it in the middle. I mean, I ran a half an hour before I noticed it the first time. The second time I caught it after only 11 minutes, so, you know, hopefully I'll be able to get this done here. But one of the things I really want to do is tighten up on these announcements and advertisements. I mean, you know, you got to pay the bills to fund the whole Defender of Caregiver, you know, mission here, so that I can do the not-for-profit fundraising work. So I have to get to the sponsors, but I do want to try and get through them a little bit more quickly than I did the first time. So this podcast is brought to you by on the on the personal side of things, by SeniorLife.co. You might be a caregiver if you like to help others. According to numerous sources, the most insightful and helpful piece of information available when making an important decision is the opinion of others, of your peers, friends, and colleagues. Here, I like to call them caregivers. SeniorLife.co is the newest directory and performance review platform in the senior living industry today. If you really want to help out other caregiver decision makers, visit SeniorLife.co, that's SeniorLife.co, not .com, and leave a review of your experiences in the senior living industry. If you're trying to make a decision, visit SeniorLife.co and search the directory, read the reviews, and call the communities directly before you make your decision. Now, I want to make a quick comment. I ran way too long in the first podcast on this. The internet is a wonderful place. It provides us, you know, access to other people so that we don't feel alone. It provides us resources we could never find. It really gives us information, but it can also subject us to things that just aren't true, or people that maybe have their own intentions in mind more so than yours necessarily. So when you're doing a Google search for any service, what I want you to do is I want you to ignore, you can go back to it, but initially ignore the first several things that you get in the result, because they're paid for. Make no bones about it. Them being top of that page is a financial, paid for, bought and delivered phenomenon. They're either an outright ad, where they'll talk about that, or they have paid more than everybody else for the keywords that you might be searching for. It's entirely possible to put in the actual name of a business in an area and end up with somebody other than that business. And that business is hidden, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 places down below. So look at that a little bit. Look at what's called the URL, the www dot, and see what you're getting there. See if you can find out that you're actually going to the end provider of the services that you want to purchase or utilize. Just spend a few minutes doing that. Don't get all paranoid or worried about it, but just, you know, just know that sometimes you're not ending up where you think you're ending up. I like that "if you feel lucky" thing on Google. Yeah, it's the same concept. You know, how confident are you that you're ending up where you want to end up? So just ask yourself that a little bit and understand that some of these local providers of services are really, really excellent at the services they provide, but they're just not good at the internet game. That's why you want to pay attention to reviews of friends and family and other people, maybe on, you know, on Facebook reviews you know, anywhere that you can get an independent review. I strongly advocate that. So that's it on the personal side. A little message about how to use a search on the internet. For the professional caregivers listening today, this podcast is brought to you by Eldermark Senior Housing Software, your all-in-one senior housing software to transform your business. Over the past 20 years, Eldermark has become the leading electronic health record and healthcare technology solution for the senior care industry, and for good reason. They don't offer piecemeal healthcare management solutions. Rather, they partner with senior communities to develop a comprehensive, mobile-friendly healthcare software platform that saves time and money while raising the quality of care provided. Learn how Eldermark can help you streamline care, reduce costs, and improve lives. One of the ways Eldermark improves lives, and I can attest to this individually, is by working in collaboration with Defender of Caregivers. That's right, little old me. To provide training and marketing automation services to their clients that are less intrusive, more respectful, and most of all, more effective because they adopt a more nurturing and less nuisancey, less salesy, yeah, those are two world-class words that I created, approach. It's a more nurturing, respectful approach, less pressure-oriented. That's it. Those are the obligations and introductions out of the way. Let's dive into the podcast. So I want to... we're going to get into today's topic, which is caregiver guilt. And I want to point out something that I'm really happy and proud of. I started this caregiver's journey as the Defender of Caregivers. Well, I started my caregiver's journey, you know, way, way long ago, and that's not the topic today, so I don't want to get off topic. But specifically, the Defender of Caregivers journey has gone through a couple of different iterations. It's finding its voice. And there was a period of time where, again, as I said, I was getting really hyper-involved in a lot of individual people's lives, and I could not do them any service. The other thing that happened, and this happened when my book came out, You Might Be a Caregiver If You Give Yourself to Others and Wonder What Happened to You, is the title of my book. I know it's a whole paragraph, but that was in vogue at the time, was these long descriptive titles. And again, it's You Might Be a Caregiver If You Give Yourself to Others and Wonder What Happened to You, is the title of my book. And here's what happened when my book came out. I felt as though I was being perceived as trying to make a buck selling the book. I don't care about selling the book. I just want the message out there. In fact, I don't really hardly ever sell the book anymore. I mean, yeah, you can go to Amazon and get it, but I really don't even want you to. I'd rather you just reach out to me or go to my website, lonkiefer.com or defenderofcaregivers.com. They'll both get you in the same place, and you can download a PDF version of it for free. Or if you really want the physical copy of it, you can email me and I'll mail it to you. You'll have to pay postage and... anyway, I'm off topic. The point is, I'm not trying to sell the book. I'm going to give it away. But I do refer to the book, and I refer to what it's trying to do, which is share this whole concept of how caregivers are special people with certain, personality characteristics and traits that are both either natural, they're either born with them or they're developed, that they have some difficult decision making because of the stress involved in their lives. And wow, I don't know if you can hear that, but I think I'm about to get bombed by ISIS or something over going over. I shouldn't joke like that, but I just had a helicopter go right over the doc's den here, which is the home office, otherwise known as a shed next to my house, and it was shaking and rattling and rolling, but they've moved on. So here's the point. I'm trying to get across that caregivers have a personality. They are either born with it or they earn it. And that as a result of that, and as a result of all the obligation and stress, they are prone to thinking in certain ways. So here's the fundamentals behind the defender caregiver philosophy. We all have natural and learned tendencies based on genetics and experiences, and together these things express themselves in a personality that can change and evolve over time based on circumstances. And one of these personalities that's expressed is that of a caregiver. And this caregiver personality is both measurable and in some ways predictable, while being neither good nor bad. You know, when we say a thing, it is something, it just, we're just saying that's what it is, not good or bad. And when I quote a caregiver personality trait or characteristic, it's coming straight from Myers-Briggs. They've been around for over 50 years. And if you want to learn more about Myers-Briggs testing, just do a quick Google and you can take a quick online test. But when you take that test, don't be surprised if you don't come up as a caregiver. Or if you do come up as a caregiver and then you take it later and then you don't again. The point is, a personality can evolve and morph over time because we both have it innately and in nature, and we have it that we've learned, nurture. We all think both rationally and irrationally, and when we are stressed, we tend to think irrationally in distorted ways. This comes from a book called Feeling Good by Dr. David Burns. This is kind of like my Bible. And in another podcast, when this is the topic, I'll talk more about how I came to know of Dr. Burns's work. A very funny story and very true. But anyway, he's my godfather, and he has written the, he's not my godfather, he's my godfather on this distorted thinking thing. And his book talks about cognitive distortions and how we think that way when we're stressed. Now, I have another belief, transformational, that we go through transformational processes in our decision making about life, and it starts with awareness. Why are things happening? Acceptance. What needs to change? You know, and how are they going to change? And allowance. Am I going to allow myself into this new world? You know, what specifically spiritually and intellectually is going to happen next? And the big piece is, who's going to be there with me as I allow myself or don't allow myself on that journey? So awareness, acceptance, and allowance. If you want to start with a book that'll get you on this process, you can start with Simon Sinek's Start With Why. He talks about the why, how, what phenomenon. He's way further ahead and specific on that than I am. This is the awareness, acceptance, allowance is something I stumbled into and then learned of Simon Sinek later. Great read. And then finally, that ties it all together is that given the stress of being a caregiver, caregivers are more prone to these distorted thinking processes because they're under a bit of, well, not a bit, a ton of ongoing stress through the responsibility of caring for others. So specifically, what is caregiver guilt? Well, if you do a simple Google, you'll find out that caregiver guilt is a common feeling in the landscape of caregiving. Guilt, I'm reading to you now from Google, guilt can propel you to be the best you can be, or it can immobilize you. So a lot like stress, guilt can be a motivator. It can propel you to be the best you can be, or it can immobilize you. For caregivers, painful feelings such as guilt, sadness, and anger are very real, and they're like any other pain. You then feel guilty when you even recognize your needs, much less act upon them. Now let's go back to the original "you might be a caregiver if" statement that we started with, and that is that you might be a caregiver if you sometimes, where is it? I lost it here. You might be a caregiver if you sometimes feel guilty for things that are really not actually your responsibility, and then you apologize for it. I made that up on the fly because I can't find it in my notes. But there we are. We've come full circle with the definition of caregiver guilt. Now, before we get too far into this, I also want to talk to you about today's podcast being brought to you by, we always announce a caregiver distortion. Think of Sesame Street when you're a kid, you know, brought to you by the letter so-and-so. I'm going to have to watch some old Sesame things. So that's what I'm trying to capture here. Brought to you by the boom, and give you a cognitive distortion that today's podcast is brought to you by. So today's, drum roll please, is cognitive distortion number 10, personalization. You see yourself as the cause of some negative external event for which, in fact, you were not primarily responsible for. This is called personalization. I also call it guilt seeking to some degree. Now, mind you, this is taking responsibility for a negative outcome. Now, we could have a sensationalism or a narcissism or what have you, where you take responsibility for something positive that you had really nothing to do with, or that you weren't primarily responsible for it, which is the reverse of personalization. Now, here's kind of a funny anecdote that I always talk about. My mother kind of taught me this forever. She always told me that, you know, we're kefirs. We're narcissists with an inferiority complex. My mom, daggone, the wisdom from our moms, huh? Yeah, no doubt. Well, caregivers are a lot like that. Narcissists with personality, with inferiority complex. And please take this, you know, you got to take this lighthearted and not take it personally. What I mean by that is that, you know, the caregiver personality really thinks either nature or nurture. They either think naturally that they can do amazing things for other people and they are willing to step in, or nurture, they've learned that they can do amazing things for other people. Like their to-do list is like way longer than they ever thought they could get done, and somehow they get it done. So one way or the other, they have this great confidence in their ability to get things done, yet they have this great inferiority complex at the same time, that they're just not doing enough and that they could do more. So let's back up a little bit to before we get into today's classic story to talk about caregiver guilt and personalization, and to try and tie them together, because that's what we do here. We give you a little bit of actual, you know, lessons and teaching, and then we tell you a story to try and tie it all together. At least that's the construct and the outline of these podcasts. So let's talk about two different types of caregiver. And I'm going to do a whole segment on this later, so I'm not going to give you the real funny stuff, but I'm just going to, you know, the like stage performance where there's a scene in our play defending the caregiver, which, by the way, I virtually do only as a nonprofit type of thing. I like to do it in churches, theaters in a school, or actual theaters in an area to benefit, you know, local fundraising efforts for caregivers. The first one we ever did was Lifting David. You could go to the GoFundMe account for Lifting David to see a little bit more about that. But there's two types of caregivers. There's nature and there's nurture. The nature caregivers come to the role willingly. They seek the role. They even fight for the role. Now, don't get me wrong here. They don't celebrate the fact that someone in their life is in a position to need a caregiver support or help. But if someone in their life is in that position, they gladly step into the role of caregiver. And then there's nurture caregiver. These are folks that sort of fell into the role by circumstance. They didn't seek it. It's not in their DNA. It's not something they desire to do. But here's a you know, here's something that needs to be done, and they're going to step up and do it because you know, they you know, what are they going to turn the other way? So the nature caregiver, the person that is naturally would step into this role, they are frequently motivated by guilt. Now, remember, when we did the Google on guilt, it can propel you or it can immobilize you. So guilt can be a sort of a motivating thing, but it can also be a paralyzing thing. Well, the same for anger, which is the hallmark of a nurture caregiver. They don't want this. They make no bones about the fact that they don't want this, but they're not going to walk away from it because they've got, you know, morality, or they've got, you know, they feel an obligation, or they're motivated by empathy. So either way, you've got guilt for the nature caregiver or anger for the nurture caregiver. Now, I'm going to read you an excerpt from my book. And remember, I give you this disclaimer about how I'm giving the book away. So don't think this is a shameless plug to sell a book. It's not. It's a shameless plug to help you understand something. And I call that the ego to God complex. And I'm going to tell you what I believe about it now. But first, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from chapter 5 of my book. And the chapter title is Why Caregivers Are Distorted and Contorted. So we read from the book, The Caregiver's God Complex. Without this understanding of what care truly means, here I'm referring to a preceding paragraph or two where I describe care and what it truly means, maybe future podcasts. Without this understanding of what care truly means, the caregiver is left reading from their script and stuck in the quickening spin of the caregiver's dilemma. They will develop a God, G-O-D, complex. The caregiver expects great, even impossible things of themselves. They can never do enough because they have no sense of how much is enough. As we said before, their work is never done, and because they have either a desire to do more, nature caregiver, or a sense of obligation or commitment to do more, a nurture caregiver, they begin to think of themselves with God-like expectations. But alas, they are not omnipotent. They have limits. They are not God, and when they finally realize this, they experience guilt. When you start with guilt and add to it continued and ever-increasing obligation, you frequently get inexorably depression. Guilt plus obligation equals depression. So, and then in summary, if Doc, the defender of caregivers, can help the caregiver let go of their guilt, and without the G in guilt, there can be no, and even, you know, there can be no God. Well, without guilt, the equation no longer equals depression. It remains simply obligation. So there we go. Now, one of the things that I both like and don't like about reading from my book is that, one, I don't like to read to people. But two, like a personality, things morph and change over time. And there's aspects of my book that it's not that I disagree with them, it's that I've kind of evolved from them. And here's kind of how I view this a little bit differently in today's world. Caregivers are doers. They're people that they're not going to sit around and do nothing. If there's a problem, they're going to solve it. And in this regard, that's the nature caregiver, but the nurture caregiver is the same way. Now, mind you, the nurture caregiver is an interesting study in that they don't want the role, but they accepted it anyway. Somewhere in there, they have this moral obligation where they're going to accept the role, when as others, you know, could say no and do say no. So even though there may not be the nature caregiver, naturally, there's something about them that is caregiver-like. Now, I want to take a bit of a sidebar here. When you're talking about nature versus nurture and you're talking about caregiver, it can get very confusing because people think the word caregiver is synonymous with nurturing. It's not. I know some amazing caregivers that are amazing people that would do anything for anybody, but they're not nurturing. They're kind of tough. They're rough around the edges. But what they would do, what they would not, you know, they would go to the end of the earth to help somebody, but they're going to be tough and gruff about it. It's not that they always have to be touchy-feely, caring. See how that word crops in? So don't confuse caregiver and nurture as to mean that they're always these lovey-dovey type of people. But what they are is action-oriented people that do things for others. They're empathically driven. So here's where I start to deviate from that writing in the book. I refer to it now as the ego to God complex. You stick with that guilt, obligation, depression aspect if you don't go into it with proper perspective. But we have to go back a step further and why they're caregivers, period. Whether they're nature or nurture, the bottom line is that they're ruled by empathy. So you know the difference between empathy and sympathy. Sympathy is when you feel sorry for somebody. Empathy is when you know what someone feels. You truly can feel their pain. So when you have empathy and you then would feel guilty if you didn't do anything for those that you empathize, if you felt that you could do something. So that becomes an obligation. So that's ego. And let's get back to the narcissist with an inferiority complex. So they're ego-driven, empathy, guilt, obligation. And they feel that they have to do something. And if they don't, then they're just going to feel bad about it. And the word depression might be too strong. But besides, I use that in a sort of a colloquial layman's term, not the medical clinical term. Again, another podcast. But somehow we have to break that cycle. And But the bottom line is, because of empathy, caregivers are doers. They're people that do things. I remember growing up, I tried to study religion and learn more about it. I went to church and that sort of thing, but through divorce and what have you, I didn't consistently go to church, and so I tried to reach out. And this isn't a I'm off the subject to be even talking religion, period. But one of the things about religion that I didn't like was the advice I would get from people was to put the oars in the boat, leave it to God or leave it to a higher authority or what have you. And that used to anger me. And I'm like, I can't do nothing. I can't do nothing. I've got to take action. I've got to try. You guys have heard about, my friend Scott, my man crush. I mean, you should see him when he has no choice but to do nothing. He can't even, he just, I mean, he's beside himself. He's what I call a dragon slayer. He's going to go out and slay that dragon. He's not going to wait for the dragon to come and get him. Even if it's a mythical dragon, he wants to take action. And this guy is, he's hardcore and he can be really tough. But he is absolutely a caregiver. And I had that same sort of thing. I can't do nothing. Then over the years, you meet interesting people in your life as you go around. One of the people that was a very significant portion of my life for about 5 years before circumstances drew us apart. No ill will or anything. We just kind of went our separate ways. Was a guy by the name of Drew Brown. Now, Drew Brown is an American fighter pilot and a great speaker. And God, I could do a whole story. Actually, I should have him on as a podcast. It'd be a good way to rekindle the relationship. But Drew was the son of Bundini Brown. Now, Bundini was the corner man and spiritual advisor for Muhammad Ali. And I just tell you this in context because it was a powerful person in my life for a short period of time. Well, still is, just not physically, more a memory. And he used to call me. He said, "Lonnie," and he was very much into higher power. And he said, "Lonnie, you got it all wrong. Putting the oars in the boat isn't doing nothing. It's doing the next best indicated thing and then accepting the results. You just accept the results. You don't question them. And then you reanalyze. And again, you do the next best indicated thing. You put the oars in the boat, accept the results, and move forward." And what an epiphany of understanding I gained by learning that simple analogy there. So, empathy, guilt, obligation. Now, the thing is that when you take the step to accept the obligation, to accept the role of caregiver, you need to remove personalization, which is you see yourself as the cause of some negative external event for which, in fact, you were not primarily responsible for. The chances are, if you're in a caregiver role and you don't get a real objective about this, is that some, people are going to decline, or they're going to pass away, or what have you. And if you don't get real objective about that, you're going to personalize it. You're going to actually, even in some cases, take responsibility for it. I remember a dear friend went into hospice nursing and was, the whole thing there was death with dignity and comfort and compassion. And but they get so upset whenever somebody died, as if being a better professional nurse was going to change the outcome, and they just completely missed the whole point of it. I have a concept that I talk about, and it may sound a little callous at first, but if you kind of embrace it for a minute, you can see the wisdom of it. At least I think there's wisdom of it. I call it elevating the inevitable. If there are certain things that are inevitable in your life and in your future, when you get to them, instead of viewing it as, a negative thing, you can view it as maybe not a positive thing, but that you can elevate the inevitable. You can say, "Hey, here we are. We knew we were going to be here. We talked about this. We thought about this. We planned for this. Emotionally, we're still going to go through it, and it's going to be tough. But circumstantially, from an intellectual standpoint, from a rational, practical standpoint, we've already laid out a path for ourselves. So you can elevate the inevitable. And when something harsh comes along, whether it is that, you know, you have to take away the keys from your parents, or you have to allow someone to come in and help care for you at home, or you have to do an ADL. We talked about that in podcast number one, and embracing the role of caregiver, which comes with doing something like an ADL or getting a terminal diagnosis. You know, when you're dealing with the emotions of that, one of the rewards can be that you're recognizing, you know, what's going on. You're aware, you're putting the oars in the boat, that you're making good, rational, rather than distorted decisions, because you sort of saw it coming. So you elevate the inevitable. You don't celebrate that somebody had a decline or went into a next phase of dementia or could no longer drive or could no longer walk or care for themselves, but you elevate the fact that you prepared for this, and you got to take something positive out of it. Rather than so take a step down that narcissistic road, if you want to use a term. Admittedly, it's not an overly flattering term, and I kind of regret that I even said it there, but the point of it is that you should elevate the fact that you knew this was coming, that you planned for it, that you have a process in place, and that, hey, here we are, and it's a terrible thing that we're here, but we knew we were going to be here, and at least I can make, you know, I can think about this in a clear way by putting the oars in the boat and accepting the results. One of the things I always say for professional caregivers is that our role is to defer credit and absorb blame. I did this as a leader in healthcare. I would want to make sure that anything good that happened, I would give the credit of that to somebody else, and anything bad that happened, I would take responsibility for it, which is sort of a professional way of personalization. And just hold on to that for a minute. And I would completely flip the script for personal caregivers, where I would defer blame and absorb credit. And don't blame an individual, blame the circumstances. You know, this is inevitable. We're going to elevate the inevitable, and I'm going to absorb the credit for just, even if I've taken no action, for accepting that it is what it is. So we got awareness, acceptance, allowance. You see where we're going with this, folks? Be aware, you know, inevitable, things are inevitable. You're aware of that. And when you get to that point, you go, ah. And when you elevate the inevitable, you're accepting that this is going to happen. Nothing you're going to do is going to change that it's going to happen. You can just change how you handle it, that you can put the oars in the boat. And then allowance, you can allow yourself to take the next step, and you can maybe even have somebody at your side. Now, remember, I am not, even though I come from the senior living industry, I'm a registered nurse for 30-some years, I'm a nursing home administrator for 20-some years, you know, I do consulting and speaking and training in the assisted living industry, and well, all phases of senior living, but I'm not an advocate. Let me back up. I am clearly an advocate for those industries. I believe that they are, you know, amazing professional caregivers work in those industries and do amazing jobs. But I'm not advocating for you, the personal caregiver, to go out there and, you know, jump into these relationships. I am here to advocate for you making whatever decision is best for you in a rational way, not in a distorted way. So you elevate the inevitable, you blame the scenario, the circumstances, and you absorb credit. Now, for the professionals, when I told you defer credit and absorb blame, that's in your role as leadership, not as an individual. But the point of it is that in the end, you want to divorce yourself, both the professional and personal, you divorce yourself of any pejorative judgment, and you simply accept the results as they are, and you put the oars in the boat. And you move forward. So now I want to talk to you. So you have to understand that personalization is a distorted thought. So Now, let me tell you a story. And this is the part of the podcast that I really get a kick out of, when I can tell you some real life stories where this all comes together, and it becomes very real, and it becomes a pro, a pro per perspective of professional and personal. And I want to tell you the story about Reverend Williams. Now, first thing I got to tell you is that this is a true story, but it's a false name. I don't ever want to bring any attention to any unrequested attention to any of the professional or personal family caregivers that I talk about here. And if I do, it would be in the form of being on the podcast itself, and even then I would allow them to use a fictitious name. So, and I have to look back at my little outline here, because I don't even remember Reverend Williams. I don't even remember, it's going to be hard for me to remember that name, because that is not the name of the amazing man that's in the story that I'm about to tell you. And it loses a little bit for me as I tell you that. And I just want to be as genuine as I can. This is a true story, an amazing individual, and as much as I would love to honor him and his family by telling you his name, things can sometimes go sideways. So we'll call him Reverend Williams, and I remember the day that Reverend Williams came into my life. I was the administrator of a 130 thereabouts bed skilled nursing facility, and we had a 20 bed assisted living community attached to the back of the building. And when you talk about regulations and approaches, there's a very different approach in each of these worlds. By the way, if you're in the industry, or if you're not, go to McKnight's and do a Google or look up the long-term care industry. Should be ashamed to read an article about what a professional, mind you, most of the people that go into the profession have nature caregiver, leanings. This is the careers that they choose. So they're also personal caregivers. But this is a not so wonderful story about someone that left the industry talking about a peer of hers that, as she calls it, is trapped into the industry. And the article can get a little bit negative at times, where it's blaming, big corporations for making money, which I don't think is entirely fair. I mean, thank God in many, that they're focused on the bottom line at some level, because I've been involved with, if they're not run fiscally soundly, no one wins. So I don't want to let this article be a bashing of big corporations. So that part of it, take with a grain of salt. But they also talk a lot about the surveying regulatory side of it. And I don't want to bash that world either. I'd like to have a pro per relationship between operators and regulators as well, because, the saying throwing the baby out with the bathwater, it is no more, and it's not a baby. Gosh, I feel like I have to apologize. I don't want people to take me out of context here. I think most of you probably know where my heart is by now. But the throwing the baby out with the bathwater phenomenon is very real in the senior living industry, because, we want to protect these vulnerable folks that we care for so much that we create regulation that sometimes gets in the way of really providing the kind of care and compassion that we would like to see. And I don't want to go any deeper into this, but it's an interesting perspective for you to read. I want to always share with you these kind of perspectives. But so the world that I had, which was somewhat unique, is that I was running a nursing home, but I was also running an assisted living community, and they have very different types of regulations and expectations. And Reverend Williams was moving into my assisted living community, and I was in a family conference on the skilled nursing side, and my nurse from back in the assisted living broke into the meeting and said, "I have to talk to you. I have to talk to you." She pulled me out. She goes, our new admission, Mr. Williams. She didn't even know he was a reverend at the time. She referred to him as Mr. Williams. I said, you got to come back and talk to him. And I'm thinking, what is have things gone badly? Is he being combative? Is he being argumentative? Is the family? Actually, I'm already telling you the story incorrectly. I was with his family, talking to them about what they could expect at the moment, now that if I remember it more clearly. And she interrupted me and pulled me aside, and she goes, you got to, I don't know what to do. You got to send his family back. You got to do whatever. And I'm like, well, what's the problem? She said, he's back there putting on rollerblades. This man was in his early 90s. His family was up front with me. A couple of family members were up front with me. And he was in the back. And the family had said, you know, you just hang out here and get used to your room. We'll be back to help you unpack. So he decided to put on his rollerblades and go rollerblading, in our parking lot. And she said, what do I do? What do I do? And this is where I had insight to the different regulations between a nursing facility and an assisted living facility. A gentleman that can rollerblade, is probably not going to be in a nursing facility, but he can be in an assisted living facility. And I don't even like the word facility. I said, well, you know, does he need help putting on his rollerblades? I mean, get out of the way. And so we agreed that what we would do is that we would care plan the fact that he did rollerblading, you know. And but the funny thing is that, you know, all I did as the quote unquote leader there was call out to them the things that they could do and how they could put the oars in the boat, and so to speak. So what we did was our maintenance director, and I used this selfishly because I didn't think that they paid as much attention to the back of the house, assisted living, as they did to the front of the house as far as landscaping. So I made sure that the maintenance guy and the grounds crew went out there with their leaf blowers and cleaned up the parking lot as best they could, so that he would be able to rollerblade without tripping. But that's the first exposure I had to Reverend Williams. And I had amazing stories that he told me about how he started life as an orphan, and he ran away from the orphanage at the age of, I think he was like six. And one of the things about my stories is that if I don't remember the specific facts, I make them up. I don't make up the story, but I round out the parts so the story can evolve. So I don't remember how old he was at the time, but I want to say he was like 6 years old. And he had run away from the orphanage that he was in at the time. And mind you, this man was 93 at the telling of this story. And this is probably a 7 or 8 year old story. So let's go 2010, 93. So let's just say, gosh, I can't do the math. What would that be? 1917, and you add 6 years. So this was the 20s. This was the Depression. So in like 1922, this guy, oh my gosh, amazing. In 1922, this 5 or 6 year old runs away from an orphanage, and where does he end up? But in a junkyard. And he is in a junkyard that has a fence around it, and he is living cars were only out for I don't know how long. But anyway, if I get too detailed on the story, I'm going to even lose faith in it myself. But as he tells the story, he lived in this junkyard for a couple of weeks before the police could get him. They knew he was there, but he was going through a hole in the fence. And when they'd see him, he'd run through the hole in the fence because he was scared of them, and he would hide, and they couldn't find him. So finally they found him, and they took him back to the orphanage. And, you know, I'm just trying to give you the rags to riches story of this man. So he went on to be a reverend and had a flock that he managed for many, many years. And this gentleman was he was a tiny guy. He was about 5'5", you know, maybe 125, 130 pounds, but he was dressed so crisp and we had so many conversations. But the problem was he was clearly starting to demonstrate some dementia, and he was slipping. And I'm sure I'll tell you more stories about Reverend Williams later, but I'm told to make these podcasts clean, I need to keep them at a certain length, and so I want to be able to tie this up. So I'm going to get to the point here. But here's a very proud man who was starting to lose his faculties, yet every now and then would have these just clairvoyant moments where he would just teach me amazing perspectives. And one of them was when we had a family conference. And unfortunately, the family conference was to talk about the fact that we thought it was time for Reverend Williams to come from the assisted living area where there was no real safety mechanisms for elopement or wandering with dementia and move him into the skilled nursing part of the building where we had the systems in place to try and provide a modicum of safety for that. So we had a family conference, and it's funny because he said, y'all go ahead and talk about me. I don't want to be part of it. It upsets me when y'all talk about me. But I know y'all love me, so you go in there and do what you got to do. So I went into this meeting, and there were three of his children there. We had an entrepreneur who owned his own business. We had a doctor, and we had a lawyer, and we did what we needed to do. I saw Reverend Williams later in the afternoon, and I said, Reverend Williams, you must be so proud of your family. And he said, big booming voice, little man, always struck me with this, and I could just imagine him up there preaching. He said, don't you do that to me, young man. Don't you hold me accountable for that. And I said, Reverend Williams, I just complimented you and your family. He goes, I want you to know something. Those children of mine are their own. I love them, but don't you make me responsible for their achievements. He goes, I have six children. You only met three of them. And then he went on to tell me, he goes, that's because one of them wouldn't come no matter what we do to ask. One of them I won't let come, and the other one I don't know where they are. So he gave me the rundown. He's got an entrepreneur, he's got a doctor, he's got a lawyer, he's got one that's in prison, he's got one that he hasn't talked to in 100 years, and he's got one that has just been kind of ostracized from the family. And his point is that he's not responsible for their outcomes, and I should not put that on him. So personalization, you know, he's not taking credit for the good or the bad. He's neither a narcissist nor is he personalizing. Personalization is when you see yourself as the cause of some negative external event for which, in fact, you were not primarily responsible for. Now, let me tie this together and go back to putting the oars in the boat. He told me that I had six children and I did my best by all of them. I loved them. And what they became is in the child. It's not in the parent. So let's go back to empathy, guilt, obligation, and depression. We live by empathy, where we feel pain. We feel an obligation through guilt. Once we accept the obligation or the burden to care for another person, we have to put the oars in the boat. We have to remove personalization. We have to make the next best indicated decision, and we have to accept the results. So that's how I tied together my fantastic relationship with Reverend Williams together and the caregiver distortion personalization and my buddy Drew Brown's advice to put the oars in the boat, and how you can break the cycle, whether it's guilt or anger, whether you're nature or nurture, of feeling that you have control over outcomes. You have no control over outcomes. You only have control over your efforts. So that's it for the podcast. Please share this with others. Please find us on Facebook. Talk about us in general. If there's anything I can do to help you, short of giving you personal advice on your situation, offer you a resource or a perspective, I hope you'll reach out to me at lonkiefer.com or defenderofcaregivers.com. Please remember our sponsors, SeniorLife.co and ElderMark. And by way of our closing remarks, remember, I'm trying to teach you the vow, and I want you to repeat after me, the caregiver's vow. I am proud of who and what I am. I am a caregiver. I live in awareness that I take satisfaction in pleasing others and sometimes overcommit. I accept that some things I cannot change and that I am not perfect. I will allow others to help and join me on my caregiver's journey. I will honor myself as I care for others. This is my solemn caregiver's vow. Okay, everybody, that's it. Second podcast is in the books. Find us at Facebook, Defender of Caregivers, and I got to run. And remember, in everything you do, think also of you. Love y'all. See you next time. Goodbye. And most of all, thank you for caring.